The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Jenios Wealth Management Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.
Is the Fed's inability to pick a direction affecting the markets? Well, we seem to think it does here, and it's what really matters. With Peter McClellan and Jeff Hyback, we start now. And welcome to What Really Matters. I'm joined today, as usual, by Jeff Hyback of Strategic Equity Management, and Jeff is a active money manager. And Jeff, you've been blogging about the relative lack of volatility, and yet at any moment the market could cave way because of just how synthetic it all is. What do you make of today's action? I mean, it was a pretty nondescript week until today. So what's my Dow is off 400, roughly almost 400 points, and it's a pretty big drop. I think people are saying it's the biggest drop since Brexit, right? So
yeah,
what do you think? What do you make?
That was the end of June, and it broke a, I believe, 42-day trading streak. So considering weekends, you know, it really does take us back to early July, where the market had not moved more than 1% in either direction, which was by far a new record. And one of the things we've been talking about throughout in the blog and on What Really Matters is, why is this happening? And, you know, and then also, you know, most importantly, the ramifications of having such a short-term focused Federal Reserve, which created a short-term focused market. And in fact, early this morning when I wrote the blog, the S&P futures were, I think, down or up 0.02%. So it was looking to be yet another flat, boring day. And so I wrote it and I posted it. But I did, you know, put one thing in there. And I brought it up last week. And, you know, you and I spent a lot of time talking about it. The use of derivatives and this so-called risk parity trade. Mm-hmm. And I actually included the chart, which I guess ended up being a little prescient, of we have to be really careful with these markets because we have so many institutional investors following these computer models that are using derivatives. And again, if you want to find out why derivatives are dangerous, listen to What Really Matters from last week.
Right.
Because I think we did a really good job in layman's terms to explain what they are and why they're so dangerous. But the use of these by too many people with the same types of models is fine unless the market moves counter to what their models predict. And the most models assume you have diversification if you own government bonds and stocks. Government bonds tend to go down when stocks go up, and they tend to rally when stocks go down. And we've seen a few cases. Last August, we saw a case where bonds were down and stocks were down. Going back further, you go back to 2013, 2014, when the Fed started talking about tapering quantitative easing. And we saw the same thing where bonds and stocks sold off at the same time. And what we're concerned about, you know, in this trade is forced selling by these models because all of a sudden they're not working and they have no idea what their exposure is. And, you know, they went from thinking they had low risk to extremely high risk because everything they own is going down.
And so do you perceive today's market volatility as being impacted somewhat by the derivatives?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt, this was impacted by the derivatives. And, you know, so I posted the blog. I mentioned the risk parity thing. And, you know, when this happens, it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. I go to a doctor's appointment and, you know, with the market opening basically flat, and I come back and it's down 1%. What in the world? So I kind of start digging around and, you know, I'm not finding a lot. And then I go into a meeting with a client and come back and now it's down 1.5%. And so I kind of took a step back and started doing some research. And really, it's interesting. You know, it's been a while since we talked about John Malden, who I think deserves the title Mr. Sunshine more than I do.
I have to agree with you. Do not read Malden stuff on the weekend unless you want to have a tough weekend.
And unfortunately for his subscribers, he sends his stuff out on the weekends, but I tend to wait till Monday morning. But he does a really good job of painting not even just a big, I call it the giant picture perspective. And one of the things I'll never forget is reading about this computerized experiment that was done trying to study avalanches and how they develop. And basically what they were doing was taking these, you know, computer-generated randomness of, they use sand and, you know, how sand falls, and they would color code it. And what would happen is they noticed as they ran these experiments on the computer over and over and over again was you would end up with these, what he called fingers of instability in the sand pile, where they don't quite line up, so they're not stacked well. And I think if you've ever, you know, built sand castles, you understand this. And so they're trying to apply it to figure out, well, how can we predict avalanches? And the bottom line was they couldn't predict where these fingers of instability were. Well, Mr. Malden went and took that same analogy to the economy, and that's kind of what we're seeing in this our financial system is you end up, you know, piling up these risks and things like that, and it's fine, and things keep going on. But what they learned in studying these avalanches is that when you develop these fingers of instability, and by far the use of derivatives, I mean, what was $630 trillion worth of derivatives on a market that's about $90 trillion, so seven times the value of the market out there in derivatives. What they found was it could take one more drop of sand to cause the whole thing to come crashing down. And that's what we see happening in the market. So when you have these fingers of instability on a bigger scale, you know, that's what can happen. And obviously that's what happened with the financial crisis. Everybody says, oh, the housing bubble caused it. No, it was all the derivatives out there based on housing that caused it. And it was really minor events you started to see in the, you know, very small mortgage companies failing. That was kind of the sand that started that big avalanche. And so in a smaller scale, I, you know, looked at what happened to cause this type of a sell-off. And you know, I came up with really three things today that drove it. And I thought it was interesting yesterday, on Thursday, that the market didn't sell off because...
Why? What did you expect?
Well, the ECB, European Central Bank, which is their version of the Fed, was right. Set to meet. And they've been one to, you know, Mario Draghi, the head there, has said he would do whatever it takes to save the economy. And the speculation was, you know, they've already kind of followed the Fed's roadmap and then taken it even further because they lowered rates to almost zero. They told the markets they're going to keep them near zero for a long time. They did their own version of quantitative easing where they created euros to buy assets from the banks. And then they took it even further and they started buying corporate bonds instead of just mortgage-backed bonds and government bonds. Well, the rumor circulating was the next whatever it takes out of the European Central Bank, and also the Fed, ECB has done negative interest rates. What everybody expected them to do was to announce that they would consider buying stocks. So they would create euros and buy stocks to try to stimulate their financial system. And he came out and they held their meeting and he held a press conference and he said, well, I really don't see there's a reason for us to do anything at this time. Now, you go back to what we've seen happening since his last press conference a few months back, and we've seen massive gains in risky assets overseas. You know, the emerging market stocks, emerging market bonds, high-yield mm-hmm. bonds, those types of things have had really
small
strong
caps.
Gains. Yeah, small mm-hmm. caps, because everybody thought, well, the ECB is going to end up buying these, so we're going to lower the risk premium we need to receive because you have that buyer of last resort behind you. And then there was really just kind of a lull where people took time to consider it. Well, then overnight, I guess there's four things you got to consider. Overnight, we saw North Korea again test a nuclear weapon. And, you know, one of the jokes I saw on Twitter was, well, maybe the president needs to give them $1 billion.
Yeah.
Like he did Iran. But
oh, geez.
I won't go there. But what we saw then happening was we started to see emerging market bonds and then global right. government bonds sell off. And then we started hearing people talking about what Jeffrey Gundlach, who is, you know, now called the new bond king, who's made mm-hmm. some very good calls on interest rates and the overall stock market. He took a 1 month sabbatical right after he said, in his opinion, he'd sell everything.
Oh,
well, he came back and he, after his month off, and he said, you know, he not only reinforced that, he started laying out the case where previously he had thought treasury bond yields in the U.S. would, you know, stay around 1.5%, if not drift a little bit lower. He said mm-hmm. now he's starting to believe there's a case where the Fed may want to shock the markets into, you know, switching things around, because right, everybody believes the Fed is paying attention to what the market's doing. In fact, I heard some people on Bloomberg today joking that, uh-oh, the markets were down. The Fed's probably going to hold an emergency meeting this weekend to talk about stimulus. Well, Mr. Gundlach, who makes his money trading the bond market, believes they want to shock the market into understanding, look, we've done all we can do. We need to normalize interest rate policy. We don't care what the markets say. We're going to raise interest rates. And he thinks that could spark a big sell-off in the bond market. And that's what we saw. Treasury bonds, mm-hmm. which on Tuesday were right around 1.53%, shot all the way up to 1.67% today, which just looking at a treasury bond ETF that's invested in there, that's about a 1.7% loss just in one day in a bond.
Wow.
So
that's a lot. That's a lot for a
yeah.
bond, a government
and then,
bond. Yeah.
And then you had a few Fed voting members this morning giving speeches, basically saying that, you know, it seems to be time that we need to start normalizing our interest rates. And that just kind of sparked the sell-off. And then you have the computer models mm-hmm. going to work. And
yep.
gosh, it's, you know, it's like you said, since Brexit was, which was back in June, it's been a long time since we saw this kind of a sell-off in the market.
And yeah, it has.
You know, in the whole scheme of things, the market only gave back about 41 days worth of gains. So it's not the end of the world.
But it hasn't gone anywhere in 41. It's just been flat, right? Up, down, up, down, up, down.
Very, yeah, but very I mean, modest. You think yeah. about it, it's still up nicely for the year. It's
true.
Up well
true.
Off the lows back in February. So.
All right, so what do you say to the guy that's driving home and doesn't really listen to what Draghi's doing or the Feds are doing, or just notices that they say, you know, the Dow is off by 400 points? What do you say to that investor?
Yeah, I mean, just starting with what I just said is, oh gosh, the Dow's given back 41 days worth of gains. It's not horrible. It's not the end of the world. No. Same thing I said right. after Brexit was
the event.
Yeah, it's a non-event in the big scheme of things. If you're uncomfortable with the prospect that the Dow can drop 400 points, which, you know, on a $100,000 portfolio, you might have lost, you know, $2,000 today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If that type of loss in one day is uncomfortable, you're probably not in the right investment.
Oh,
but let's take that out even further and say, okay, now that 2% correction is really nothing, something that happens quite frequently, despite what we saw the last 41 days. Let's take it out to 20%. Now, could you see your $100,000 turning into $80,000? Now, if that makes you uncomfortable, again, you're probably in the wrong investment. You need to reconsider. But in the whole scheme of things, if maybe you've been sitting and waiting and saying, well, I have way too much money sitting on the sidelines, watch this a while. I mean, a one-day sell-off is nothing. But if this develops into a 5 or 10% drop for the S&P 500 or the Dow, it might be time to put money to work if
Absolutely.
You can afford those types of losses.
And if you're long-term in your objectives, right?
Which is part of being able mm-hmm. to afford those types of losses, is how long That's you right. have to invest determines how much risk you can take.
Mm-hmm. So maybe there is some, you know, a consequence for central banks around the world creating money out of thin air. You know, maybe not, but I'm just, maybe I'm being I'm obviously a little tongue-in-cheek. You and I both know that at some point there has to be some consequence. Could this be the start of it? Who knows? It's just Friday afternoon and
the analogy I used to start the week was, you know, everybody's come back from vacation. I know you guys took a road trip. And when you see somebody that's constantly changing lanes on the freeway, not only is it very frustrating to you, it can cause you to either decide, oh my gosh, I'm going to get around this idiot and try to speed by him. Or it's going to cause you to just, you know, say, well, I'm going to keep my distance, which then slows down your trip. And either situation is frustrating and has consequences, but it also can cause collateral damage. Just last Sunday, we saw within 8 hours, two major rollover accidents near our house. And it was just people are being dangerous and aggressive with their driving, and they can't make up their mind, you know, left lane, right lane, left, you know. And that's kind of what we see with the Fed is, oh, we're going to raise interest rates. Oh, never mind. The economy was weak last month. We're not going to do it. And so it's creating all this collateral damage. And what we saw today is the collateral damage of, you know, somebody swerved to avoid this idiot up in front of us, or they hit the brakes and it caused an accident. How bad that accident gets depends on how aggressive you were. Were you following too closely to this person, or did you have your distance and have your foot over the brake ready to swerve and miss the accident on your own? It doesn't mean you're going to come out unscathed, but it means you're likely going to survive what could be a very deadly accident. And that's the analogy I started with. And today's actions don't change it. I mean, it's
no.
The Fed, I mean, the fact that people are saying, oh my gosh, the Fed should hold an emergency meeting. I know they were joking, but part of me believes they're going to have an emergency meeting this weekend.
Right. Sure.
No, it's so frustrating. It's, and taking that even a step further, one thing I've told our listeners, my readers, our attendees at our seminars, sooner or later, the Fed will lose control of interest rates. Today was a small example of what happens. They don't control the long-term rates, but the long-term rates have the biggest consequences to both our investments and the economic growth. All the Fed can control is short-term rates. So the market at some point will take over and adjust rates to where they should be. Where that is, I don't know, but I can tell you logically, they need to be higher to encourage people to actually lend money. Because nobody in their right mind wants to lend the U.S. government money for 30 years at 2%, or Germany 30 years at 0.5%. You know, that's... That, you know, like we talked about last week, that doesn't make sense in a capitalistic world. Right. And so the free market needs to adjust that. You know, we've used an example at our seminars with, if you're a banker and you're being told you can make a mortgage at 3.5% or 4% over 30 years, where's your incentive? Mm. You know, most people just, you know, off the hip say, you know, I want at least 7% if I'm a banker and I'm loaning money on a house for 30 years. That kind of makes sense. You know, if I'm loaning the government money, maybe I don't need 7%, but I would like 4% or 5%.
Right.
And so if we need capitalism to work, we have to have a free market. And the longer the Fed tries to keep things from being free, the more you're going to see days like this. And it just becomes really important to understand this is a short-term phenomenon that's gone on for way too long.
Yeah, it is. In the whole scheme of things. And I just remind our listeners, if you haven't explored the merits, in plural, of active money management on all sides, whether we're talking about a conservative investor or somebody who's saying, no, I'd like to take advantage of this volatility, you really need to look at Jeff's blog, first of all, semtradersblog.com. Here in Minnesota, look us up at the 401k Latte in Lakeville, and we'd be delighted to speak to you about it. But, you know, we are living in some of the craziest of times where things really don't make a great deal of sense. The market's synthetic. Who knows where it's going to wind up? We just know that at some point, it can't continue to defy gravity. It can't continue to do what it's doing based on fluff. And so if you haven't explored that, you know, don't be another one of these people that say, oh, man, I was thinking I should have been a little more risk conscious. I would have retired back in 2002. I've heard that, or 2006, and yet 2008 came along, that kind of thing. Don't let that be the case for you. There's no need to do that. You know, if you've been in equities, you've had a pretty good run overall, all right? You really have. And like Jeff said, all right, so we lost what going back to Brexit, you know, it erased these 41 days of minor ups and downs. Big deal. That's not a big deal in the scheme of things. This could be a big deal if the sand gives way. The problem is we don't know, but we do know. A lot of us do know there are days ahead. We have certain things we want to do. So be sure you understand what you're expecting of your money over the different periods of time. If it's short-term money, it shouldn't be in the market. If it's longer-term money and you have those good number of years till you'll need the money, that's a different story. But nevertheless, we invite you to look at it, talk about it. If you haven't had a second opinion on your portfolio in a while, now is a great time. We're still so close to the all-time highs of the market and the all-time lows of the interest rate. So it's, you know, in the scheme of things, nothing's really changed today, but it could be a warning, could be a sign that, you know, there are these fingers, so to speak, of instability and sand gives way, and who knows when and why exactly that's going to give way, but it does. So Jeff, at the 401k Latte Company, we remind people to
invest in a conversation.
Do it soon.
You've been listening to What Really Matters with Peter McClellan, a chartered financial consultant with the 401k Latte Company in Lakeville, Minnesota. For a no-cost consultation or second opinion of financial issues, call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. Or visit us online at 401klatte.com. That's 401klatte.com. We want to remind you to invest in a conversation.